Hello, everybody, and today we're in this module, we're going to talk about SharePoint lists and data storage. I'm Andrew Connell, here with Ted Pannison, and
again,
we're going to, and from the last module, we talked a little bit about advanced workflow development. In this module, we're going to go a little bit more table stakes and talk a little bit more about some of the fundamental stuff within SharePoint, right?
The essence of data storage.
There you go. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're going to talk about today, Ted?
Let's see. Well, let's take us to the slides for a second. So we're in Module 2, and this is a deep dive in SharePoint lists for data storage. But before I do that, why don't you just, I guess we'll talk about a motivation first. We'll talk about creating the types to which we build custom lists, which is going to be content types, site columns. And then we're going to look at a couple different ways, creating custom lists using both declarative XML and programmatically using the client-side object model. We have to talk a little bit about updating site column to content types, talk about some nasty business in there and how to overcome it. But before we get started, why don't you give us just a little bit about the vision of this course and the other MBA courses that we're creating.
Absolutely. I think it really helps to have a good understanding of what the Microsoft's great vision is around the development here, so you have a good idea of what this picture looks like. Really is fundamental on, founds on three principles: extending Office Everywhere, connecting to Office 365 services, and building using an open platform. And so the first one, extending Office Everywhere, is going to talk a lot about being able to build on all the different product suites that we have within Office, from Project to PowerPoint to Excel to SharePoint to OneDrive, you name it, all these different pieces. For them being able to connect to SharePoint, we want to be able to use all the different APIs that are available to us. We have the SharePoint REST API and the CSOM, which we'll look at later on in this course. But then we're also going to talk about things like there's the Office 365 APIs that Microsoft has introduced. And the third piece here about really being able to let you use the tools that are the best for your platform or what you're working on today and making the best solutions for your customers, one of the big things that the Office team is all about is really about using having tools that will work across any of the platforms, not only from just the Microsoft stack, from all the different mobile stacks and desktop stacks and stuff that are out there, and all the popular platforms and stuff that are out there. So that's the main vision, I think, that we're looking to kind of strive from everything that we're going to cover in this course.
Okay, that's fair to say. And, I think with the vision that you've basically talked about, we're talking about lots of different ways to develop apps. And in this MVA course, we're looking at one specific way. If we can go back to the slides just for a second. And we're talking in these eight modules of this course about SharePoint apps in particular and how to leverage the building blocks that are part of the SharePoint online platform. So specifically, we're going to look at creating lists, and of course, creating libraries would fall under the category of creating SharePoint lists. And what would be your motivation, for really caring about creating a SharePoint list as opposed to storing your content in a SQL database or storing your content, in some other type of media? So back to the slides for one second. Let's kind of work through some of the motivations, why you might want to use SharePoint lists as you're developing a SharePoint app or, some other type of SharePoint development. Well, you want to reduce or eliminate dependencies on external storage. Might be a lot easier just to install an app as opposed to having to stand up a SQL database. Once you create SharePoint lists, there's lots of opportunities to use the built-in user interface that so many users in our industry are familiar with to do your basic CRUD operations, to be able to create, read, update, and delete the list items inside there. Also, once SharePoint takes care of the storage, you can assume that the SharePoint farm will probably be taking care of your backup and restore capabilities. SharePoint has document management. It has versioning capabilities built in. And then, furthermore, one of the things that we're going to look at is creating site columns and content types, and that can really help the way that you architect a search infrastructure, just because site columns are going to be far more searchable than if you were just to add a one-off list to a column. So that's what we're going to look at. Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to drill down on the first section of understanding site columns and content types. Now, site columns is something that many people have been developing with SharePoint, over the last 5 or 10 years, might be familiar with already, and there might be some people who are new to SharePoint. The idea of a site column is that you define a column one time, not in a list, but in a gallery that's defined at the site level. And then we can take that particular reusable column definition and use it across multiple lists or multiple site columns. Now, every single site in a site collection is going to have its own site column gallery. But a neat trick is that if you create the site columns in the site column gallery of the top level site, they are usable throughout the site collection. So one of the things that gets to be a best practice is when you create site columns, unless you have a really good reason to do something else, is to create the site columns in the top level sites of the site collections you're going to be using them in. Just as a forward reference, in the very last module of this course, we'll talk about enterprise content types so that you can create the content types a single time at the site collection level, yet still have a way to replicate them throughout other site collections within the same tenancy. Okay, now back to the slides. The next thing we want to look at is content types. So while a site column is a reusable column definition that we can use across many different lists, well, the content type is really just the next step of stitching together multiple site columns into a single definition that we're going to use for either a list item or a document inside of a document library. Now, content types are a little bit different than site columns, where a site column has to be based on an underlying field definition that SharePoint provides. Content types have to be based on parent content types. So there is this inheritance hierarchy that gets created. And in SharePoint, we have a bunch of predefined content types that come out of the box that give us the content type hierarchy that we have to work within as we start creating our own content types. Now, as an example, there is a built-in content type which is named item. And all the content types that we're going to be using inherit either from item or from something that inherits from item. For instance, there is the announcement content type and the contact content type and the task content type, and those all inherit from item. There's also the document content type, which inherits from item and adds the capabilities to actually store the blob for the document, and it also adds the capability to add a document template. So there are, you know, lots of developers who like to split up the majority of content types into two categories, list-based and document-based. And anything that inherits from document, either directly or indirectly, you can use that content type in a document library, but not a regular list. And if you have something that inherits from item directly or indirectly, but not from document, you can use that in a regular SharePoint list, but not a document library. Okay, now, when we create content types, and there's going to be a lot of advantages to creating content types if you're going to be creating your own lists within a SharePoint environment. So you have to pick a content type to inherit from. In the simplest case, I can create a content type for book, and I can inherit from item. Now, if I want to have a content type I'm going to use inside of a document library, well, I'm going to inherit from document or something that inherits from document. Okay. Now, in the next section, since we've just talked about what are site columns and what are content types, we're going to start talking about how you create these things as a developer. And what we're going to see is we have two choices. And the first choice we'll look at is creating these content types and site columns, and also the lists, with declarative XML. So let's start by creating site columns using declarative XML in a XML vocabulary we've had in SharePoint for well over a decade, known as CAML, Collaborative Application Markup Language. So the idea is that you create these declarative field elements. Now, when we look at the field element, you know, one of the things that we can see is that we require a GUID or a GUID for the ID. You give it a name, and the name has to be more of a programmatic name than a human-friendly name. There is a display name, which is human-friendly, which basically can have spaces and whatnot. And then you have a type. And the idea of the type is that is where you declare the underlying field type that SharePoint provides that your site column will be based on. Now, depending on the type of the site column, the other arguments that you add as attributes to the field element might change. And that's one of the things where the IntelliSense that's built into Visual Studio isn't perfect. So a lot of times you have to, you know, do the research and figure out how to create fields. But I think people like Andrew and I have done a lot of copying and pasting over the years, taking the field elements from one project, putting them into another, and doing the massaging. I see Andrew smiling over there. clipboard inheritance, you know, reigns. It's the one technique always, that we see that's consistent.
Always have your text file on the desktop handy.
Exactly right. Now, once you create your site columns, the content type is created. Now, the content type has a specific element that you're going to add. Now, what you're going to see is that Visual Studio is going to be very friendly to you as far as creating the top-level attributes for a content type. The ID is a very strange value at first. And if we look at the actual values inside there, you know, what you're going to see is that at first, they will have the ID of the parent, which in this case is item 0x01. And then we have a 00 to designate some padding. And then we have a GUID for our own content type. And it doesn't take very much messing around with the content type ID to make it incompatible with SharePoint. You know, so the advice is, once you let Visual Studio create the content type ID, just leave it alone unless you really know the rules of not including hyphens and things like that inside there. Now, one of the things that you do have to add is the set of site columns with field ref elements down below. Now, this joke that we've been using in SharePoint for well over a decade is you have to put in the ID that uniquely identifies the site column. You also have to put in the name that uniquely identifies the site column. So the department at the Department of Redundancy Department at Microsoft basically makes the regulations that you have to basically doubly qualify the unique qualifier for these.
It's uniquely unique.
It's uniquely unique in all unique scenarios.
It is.
Okay. So now, Visual Studio, as of Visual Studio 2012 and definitely with 2013, has added some really nice tooling so that you don't have to work with the XML directly. So we have a content type designer. And the content type designer makes it very easy, once you've added site columns, to go ahead and add them to your content type. When you have a content type, one of the things that we can do with the content type is to start using it in lists and document libraries. You know, in fact, if you have a content type and you don't use it in any list or any document library, it's useless. Now, if you create a content type declaratively with XML, but then you don't use it in a list as part of your app or your solution, well, one of the things that you could do is you could manually configure a list by going to the advanced settings of the list and picking what you see in the top screenshot there, the allow management of content types, set that to yes, and then you'd be able to manually add a content type to a list. What's probably going to be a better practice is to, after creating the site columns and your content types declaratively with XML, you also create a list definition that automatically adds the content type to it, so there's no manual efforts required to have your content type put into use. Now, when it comes to creating lists with Visual Studio, what we have is a new list designer. Now, this is different than what we had in the days of SharePoint 2010. Back in earlier versions of Visual Studio, there'd be both a list and a list definition project item that you could add to something like a SharePoint solution or a SharePoint app. Now, there is a single project item template name list. And when you select that and you create something, what you'll see is you have this choice. And the options they give you, do you want to create a customizable list template, or do you want to create a list instance? And pretty much that's what it is. If you pick the bottom option, they simply create a list instance by basically adding a declarative element and pointing to a built-in list type. However, if you pick the top option, what they do is they allow you to point to an out-of-the-box list definition, such as contacts. They make a copy of that for you as a list definition, and then they allow you to edit it, either the raw XML or through a very friendly editing process. And then they also create an instance of that for you. So let's look at a little bit more detail on that. So let's say that you pick the first option. You decide to add a list to something like a SharePoint hosted app project. And you pick the first option, or the easier option down here. And then you basically pick one of the out-of-the-box list types, like contacts. And what they do is they simply add an element manifest into your project. And it is a list instance. And it has things such as the template type, which is the integer identifier for the list type. In our case, 105 is the contacts list type. There's also the feature ID that needs to be there, but it's just basically the GUID that identifies the SharePoint provided feature that serves up that list type inside there. One other thing to note is that whenever we create a list, and what I've done here is I've just kind of pointed to this one particular URL, all lists should be created with their root folder within the list folder, which is at the root of a SharePoint site. If you create a document library, on the other hand, Visual Studio will automatically add in lists and then the path to the root of the document library. But you should take that out, because document libraries, root folders, should always be created at the root of the site. Now, another thing that you can do is, if you are creating a list declarative with XML, you can also pre-populate many different items inside there and do it all declaratively, so there's no procedural code to write. So here's an example of, if I create a list, in our case, I'll create a customers list based on the out-of-the-box contacts list type. But now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to go ahead and pre-populate it with some items. Now, note down here, we have these row elements down here, and every row element has one or more field elements. And what we have there under name is the site column. So that's the name of the site column. One thing that throws some people off the first time they work with this is that there is no last name site column. Instead, the title column, which has the drop-down menu called the ECB menu, has its display name changed to last name inside the contacts list type. So the users see last name, but you as a developer, you know, you have to remember it's the title site column that you want to add inside there. Okay, now going a little bit further, let's say that you wanted to create a customizable list. And so with the customizable list, what we have the ability to do is to pick one of the out-of-the-box list types. You know, for instance, in my upcoming demo, we're going to create a customizable list template based on the custom list or generic list, which has a single column named title inside there. And then what we're going to do is we're going to extend it by adding support for a content type inside there. But what you can see from the screenshot over on the right here is that when you create a customizable list, they're creating a list template, which basically requires an elements.xml file and a schema.xml file. For those developers who have been creating custom lists in SharePoint since SharePoint 2003, the schema.xml file lives on. And one stage, a lot of the skills that developers have been using for years with schema.xml still work. But for people who are newer, there's also a visual designer that makes it, in some circumstances, you never have to directly touch the schema.xml file yourself. It's a pretty nice advancement. Okay, so what you can also see is that there is a very nice list designer in Visual Studio that basically takes over the edits to the schema.xml file and makes it very easy for you to find the site columns, add them inside there, or to simply add the content types inside. Okay, so let's turn our attention to our first demo here, creating site columns, content types, and list using XML. Okay, so let's go ahead. I'm going to move over to Visual Studio. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open one of my sample projects inside here, and it is the Project Manager. So what I have here is a SharePoint hosted app. So it's going to have an app web. And when the app gets installed and the app web gets created, well, you can basically add all the things that you can do declaratively with XML into the app web. So some obvious things that we always do in SharePoint hosted apps is to add the start page. into the Pages folder and to add things like JavaScript files and CSS files. But in our case, inside this project, if we come down here and we say add new item, what you see is that you can also add site columns, you can add content types, and you can add lists. And I've already added them to this particular project. So here's an example of the site columns that we can add inside. And so I also wanted to show an example that used text, note, that had site columns that kind of went through the different types of fields, so you can kind of feel them inside here as I do this particular demo. Okay, but I have a bunch of site columns inside here. Now, we also have a content type named product. If I double click on it and we open this up, it's going to open up the designer inside here. You know, so here's an example of working with the designer, fairly easy to work through when you create a new content type. Now, if I close this for a second and we get back to the elements.xml file, one of the things that you can see is that, you know, inside of this XML file here, all the different field refs. When I created this with Visual Studio, I created it based on item, so it created the content type ID for me. I'm not going to touch that. Maybe I'll come down and edit the group or the description. What's a little bit tricky is you have something called the inherits flag. And the inherits flag basically specifies whether you want the site columns from your parent type to be pushed through or you'd rather redefine them. And then down here, we also have the individual things inside there, which are the site columns. Now, let's go ahead and take a look at this list definite, or this custom list right here. Now, once again, what they've done is they provided you a schema.xml and an elements.xml file. Now, one thing that they will do is they will create the type and they'll put it to the same type because they made a copy. So when I first created this in Visual Studio, the type was 100, and you don't want to have your type of a custom list to be the same as the out of the box. So I've changed this one to 10987. You can see my sequence there. But then also you have to make sure that you go to the products instance and you have to make sure that you change this inside there as well. Okay, but what you can see is that they have a list template and the schema.xml file is going to automatically kick in and define that list type inside there. And then also when you create a list and you base it on something like the context list type, you can then come up and you can add content types. So I've added the product content type and I took the item content type that was automatically there and I removed it. And that gives us basically a list definition and a list instance. And the whole time I was in control of creating all the site columns and the content type that this list is based on. Just to go a little bit further, here I have a product images document library. Now here you can see that I'm using template ID 109, which is the built-in picture library, or if I just wanted a regular document library, I would use 101. But notice that Visual Studio will say lists/product images. So you need to get rid of lists/ in front of there, just another step that you should do as you're doing that. And then down here, I've also added a module, just a regular SharePoint module, because what I wanted to do is I wanted not just to create a picture library, but I wanted to automatically push a bunch of pictures up inside there. And so not only am I creating the document library, but I'm populating it with documents as part of the declarative processing of my XML. Okay, and then the final step that we have here, let me go ahead and close all this down. If we look at the start page right here, what I have is just a regular SharePoint app start page. I didn't do very much to modify this from what Visual Studio gave me out of the box for the start page for a SharePoint hosted app. But what I did do is I went down into the placeholder, which is placeholder main. We added a web part zone, and now we're going to add the XSLT list view web part, which points to that particular list. Okay, so let's go ahead and just run this app. I'm just going to hit the F5 key. And so when I hit the F5 key, what's going to happen? Well, first of all, Visual Studio is going to package up my app into a .app package. Because I hit the F5 key, it installs the app into my Office 365 developer site, and it takes me to the start page. You know, but the idea, the typical user experience would be that the user now wants to go and take a look at that particular app. So when they click into the app, it takes us to the start page, and there all of a sudden we have basically just a view inside here that shows us the different views. Another thing that's kind of neat about the declarative experience is that you can create multiple views. And what I mean by that is if we go back here and we take a look at, once again, this particular list, and then we go to views, note that I can create many different views. And once again, anything that you create in this UI is basically just going to be injected into the schema, that XML file. But not only have you created a list, but you've made it so that the user can come down here and basically switch between, you know, one or more views that you've created in that list. You know, so once again, what we're trying to do here is to leverage the user's familiarity with the SharePoint UI. The user is able to come down here, add new items, edit items, and all the content that they're adding, you know, is basically constrained by whatever validation is built into those site columns. Okay, and that draws our first demo to a close. Okay, now in our next section, we're going to talk about updating site columns and content types that you have created with declarative XML. Now, I guess, Andrew, what I have to say is we have some good news and we have some bad news. And the good news is that using declarative XML in the scenarios where, you know, it's possible to use, and that is inside the app web, or possibly if you're working with a no-code sandbox solution, you know, maybe we can still use them up there. The designers make things so easy to get things up and going. What's the bad news?
Bad news is the ongoing maintenance of it. The classic case is, as a developer who's done this for a while, you run across the experience where you've done what you've shown in this first demo. You've created your content type in your list, and you've spun everything up, and then your customer comes back and says, we'd like to add a column to the content type. Or they say something like, we need to make a change to an existing column. And the first time you do that, you look at it and go, oh, wow, this is not nearly as easy as it's supposed to be. And so this has been an aspect of working with lists and content types and site columns, going all the way back to when they were introduced in SharePoint 2007. And the good thing is, though, is that Microsoft has provided a bunch of guidance, which we'll show on the slides in just a minute, that gives people some things about things you want to think about. And the thing that I would encourage people to do is that, you know, read through that guidance. There's way too much to kind of look at, to kind of go through in the time frame that we have in this video. But I do think that it's something you want to be aware of what the challenges are. It's something you want to definitely think about ahead of time and even test a little bit to make sure that you understand and expect the different behaviors that are going to happen and find what the best recommendations are that people have provided. Everybody's got a best practice. I would say more that this stuff is prescriptive guidance, and you need to just add more tools to your toolbox and figure out which is the best tool for your current situation.
You're scaring away people too early. Why don't you wait another 4 or 5 minutes, and I'll let you really scare them away.
Okay,
well, let's first of all talk about how upgrade works. You know, so I think what Andrew's point is that creating your lists and the associated site columns and content types with declarative XML is great if you can get it exactly right the first time and nothing changes going forward. But let's kind of just see how the mechanics work. Now, once again, there's probably going to be two scenarios when you're working up in Office 365, because the farm solution that we've all known and loved, you know, is no longer a viable option. So having SharePoint apps and being able to create lists and the associated types inside the app web is one opportunity. And then I think also going with the sandbox solution that has no C# or VB.NET code, you know, what we call the no-code sandbox solution, you know, is another viable option. Only the code inside the sandbox solution has really been deprecated by Microsoft. You know, so the no-code sandbox solution, is one option that we have. But what you're going to see is that you have to understand upgrade options and our upgrade actions, and they can be confusing. Okay, so here's an example of a feature.xml file. And I think probably I'll wait to the demo to kind of go through these particular files. There is one declarative XML element, an upgrade action, which is called add content type field that was added to make things easier. And that's the thing I'm going to go through in demo. Yeah. And then I'll let Andrew come back in and scare you away a little bit more. Okay, so let's go ahead and show an example of, you know, how this all works. Now here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to move over to a project that I have, which is a custom list solution. So with this custom list solution, it's very much like the demo that I did, except the site columns that I have are going to be the book author, the year published, the author country, and the original language. And then we have a content type that's going to add these site columns. And then finally, we have a books list definition and list instance. Okay, so we got all that worked out. Now, when we look at this inside here, another thing to note is that you have a feature.xml file, but quite often developers don't ever look at that. You know, there was the early days of SharePoint development in SharePoint 2007 when everyone had to address the feature.xml file. But over the last couple of years, the tools have made it so many developers don't use it. Probably lots of competent SharePoint developers don't even really know what the feature.xml file is.
That sounds a lot like back in my day.
Back in my
Which
day.
Which is my day, too, to be clear.
Okay, but what we have here is this ability to put upgrade actions in place. Now, if you look at the scenario right here, let's kind of start by going to a test site. I have my test site right here, and let's say that someone's created a sandbox solution. One other thing I want to call out here is that when you create a sandbox solution, there's also something that you can do, include assembly and package equals false. And since Microsoft has deprecated the use of .NET code in sandbox solutions, this gets to be one of the first things that I do. If I create a sandbox solution intending it to be used in Office 365, the first thing I'm going to do is turn this off to make sure that, you know, I don't ever put anything behind that would be, you know, a deprecated practice. Okay, now, if I hand a sandbox solution, a no-code sandbox solution off to someone, what they're able to do now is to come through and there is a solutions gallery at the site collection level. Someone can now upload one of these. I have both the V1 and V2. So let's say someone uploads the V1. And so what's going to happen right here is it's going to give them the opportunity to activate. And once they activate the sandbox solution, any site collection level features are automatically activated. And then there's my books list right here. And I can look at the books list. I got this really pretty view of the books list inside there. That's great. Okay, but now what happened after we pushed this out into production is that someone came up with the idea of we wanted more columns inside that particular list. You know, so how are we going to address that? Okay, now I'm going to go ahead and move over to a second version of this project right here. And so in the second version, what we'd like to be able to do, and I just realized that I need to move over to this one has the changes inside there. When we look at the version two elements, what we'd like to do is add one more site column. Okay, and then also we're going to need to add upgrade actions. So here's the place where Visual Studio doesn't give you much help and you need to know what to do. If you go to your main feature, and you click on the main site template.xml file, then what we're able to do is we're able to add upgrade actions. I've also explicitly published the first one where the feature at the site collection level was 1.0.0.0, and now I've changed it to 2.0. And so when someone does the upgrade, we want to apply the manifest, which is going to create the extra site column, and then we'd like to apply the add content type field by taking our content type and pushing it into, or taking the site column, pushing it into the content type, and then push down means every list that has this content type, go ahead and add this site column inside there. Okay, so now you've kind of seen all the different pieces. Let's go ahead, and if we go to books, and we take a look at one of these particular books right here, before the update, what I'd like to point out is that nothing in this list has the back cover review note column inside there yet. Okay, but now someone comes along and says, hey, there is an upgrade available for this solution. And so back here, we can go to solutions. We can say upload solution. Note that if you're dealing with solutions, sandbox solutions, you can't have an update right over a previous version if it has the same WSP file name. So generally, we just give them different file names, and I'm going to notate that this one is V2. We'll go ahead, we'll upload this one here. As we upload that in place right here, what's going to happen is it notices that this solution and feature have already been activated inside there, but yet there is an upgrade. So they'll prompt you for the upgrade. Your upgrade actions will run inside there. You know, you can also see down here that it took the previous version that used to be activated, it deactivated it to activate the second one inside. Now, if we go back to books and we take a look at all the different books right here, I have my favorite one at the end, 50 Shades of SharePoint by Andrew Connell. And then we'll go to edit item inside here. You know, so you can see that I was able fully declaratively with upgrades to basically push a new site column inside there. Okay, but what's the rub here? What are the, there's one thing I can do, there's like 100 things I can't do.
Right, so the big one, I think that the tool that they gave us to be able to add content types using the upgrade actions, that's huge. That does give a lot of help to us. Changing an existing content type or removing, changing an existing site column in a content type or removing a column from a content type, those are two things that are not provided to us. And so there's different guidance on what you would want to do with this. And I think that, you know, some people are of the mindset that when you never want to remove one per se from a content type, from a list, you just want to hide it. And so you don't really make a change to it. You don't pull anything out. And if you say you have a change, then most people say, I'm going to create an add. And then after I create the add of the new column, then I would just migrate the data over and I'd have to write some code to do that. But the tools they gave us here with the upgrade actions, it's very similar to I wouldn't treat it too differently from updating a table like in a database. You're really just making a change to what's already there, and you do that by providing some sort of a change script. We're doing it declaratively to go through and to make that change.
Right. And it is, there's some things that are just the simplest things you wish would work out, like you have a site column based on choice, and you have three different choices, and you want to add a fourth choice. And how do I do that declaratively? Sorry, game over.
Yeah.
You know, so what so many people find is that if things are going to change, you're going to have to deal with it programmatically at some point in the future. So you might as well do that from the beginning.
Yeah.
So which is just one philosophy that some people have, not everybody, but you know that is a well-adopted philosophy that some people will never create lists declaratively just because they're constrained.
Yeah, there's definitely two schools of thought on this. I mean, it's like almost like religious wars that you would see where people have the whole VB and C sharp battle of some want to do it the declarative way as you've shown here in these demos, and some do it fully programmatic. And there's advantages and disadvantages to both. So you really just have to kind of play with both and see what's the best for you. I don't think either one of them is going to lead you down the wrong path. It's just a choice you have to make.
And it depends on the scenarios. I mean, there's some industries where things don't change very often. Paper milling maybe is something where, you know, or if I have a choice column with north, east, south, and west, that's probably not going to change.
That's pretty stale.
And there are some other things that are so volatile. So I think the volatility of your schemas moving forward is something that dictates whether you can use declarative XML or not, or whether you're going to be regretful.
Right.
Here's just a couple of the, if we go back to the slides, you want to just kind of talk through some of these documents here?
Yeah, these were some of the links that I was referring to earlier. This is some content from the Patterns and Practices group. I was involved in a lot of this, where a lot of the content was done for like previous versions of SharePoint around SharePoint 2007 and 2010. But all of it still applies because all of these things that we're talking about in these different articles that we're referencing here, everything that was defined back in SharePoint 2007 with content types, everything has been true all the way up to today's time. So even if you're looking at some of these and you say, ah, it looks like it's old version, it's all still applicable today, every single bit of it.
Yeah. Super. Okay, so now we're going to transition, and we're going to talk about the options for basically creating lists, but without using declarative XML, instead doing it programmatically. So I think probably Andrew and I are both of the camp that it's probably better to do it programmatically than declarative. But now we'll probably split where I'll be using client-side object model and you'll be using SharePoint REST API, and both of us will think that we're right and the other one's incorrect as we go through the next couple lectures here.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's kind of start with just using the client-side object model. Now, in the next two modules, we're going to take a much deeper look at both the SharePoint REST API and using the client-side object model. So here, we're going to kind of dip our toe in the water by seeing, you know, how you can use the client-side object model to do everything that I just did with declarative XML. But once you do it programmatically, CSOM or the REST API, you're going to have so much more flexibility. For instance, think about this. You can create a list declaratively in the app web with the SharePoint hosted app, but how would you create the same list on the host web? There's no capabilities that Microsoft has or plans in the future, for an app to be able to declaratively create a list, you know, inside of the host web. So doing it programmatically becomes your only choice. And once again, you just find so many different, you know, reasons why it gives you flexibility points that you don't have with declarative XML. Now, just looking at this code right here, just looking at simple, when you use the client-side object model, there is a bunch of creation information types. If I want to create a site, there's the web creation information. If I want to create a list, there's the list creation information. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and we're going to create a list creation information object. And with that, we're going to go ahead and initialize a couple of the different values as you see inside there. So you specify the URL. Let me just, you know, once again reiterate that all your URLs for lists should start by putting it in the root list folder of the hosting SharePoint site. There's also the template type, which is a integer. There is the list template type enumeration, which you can use, but you just have to cast it to an int before you can set it to the template type property inside there. Now, another thing that you'll note is that you can't get to every aspect of configuring a new list with the list creation information object. So what gets to be a very common practice is we get to our web object in here, site.list.add, we create the new list, and now what we can do is we can start setting additional properties on the list, such as whether it's on the quick launch, enable attachments, we call update, and then we call execute query to send back the things to the particular site and save our work. Now, also, I want to have a quick look at remote error handling. Now, remote error handling gets to be important because what happens when you're using the client-side object model and you try to do something like create a list and it fails because there's already an existing list of the same title or potentially there's another list that has the same URL. So CSOM has exception handling where you create an exception handling scope and then you have a scope.start scope, and then you have a start try section, and then you have to have either a start catch or a start finally. Okay, we're going to look at this a little bit more in the CSOM module that's coming up. But the reason I wanted to show this here is that when you're creating a list, how can you check whether a list already exists? Well, you can make a round trip to basically get back all the list and you can look through it. But what you can do is you can optimize your work by using exception handling with CSOM. So here's just a simple example that before creating a list, it tries to see if there's another list of the same title, and if so, it deletes it. But if that list is not there and the delete object fails, well, basically it just ignores it because I have a start catch that does nothing inside there. Okay. Now, also, let's say once you create a list, you want to add a couple list items to the body of that particular list, very easy to do. Here's some examples of using the list item creation information object. you create the list item creation information object, and then you basically assign values through an indexer syntax and the names of the site columns, and then you call update. Very straight ahead. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to finish with a demo where we're going to use CSOM not just to create a list like you saw on the slides, but it's actually going to do the whole ball of wax, create a bunch of site columns, create a content type, and then create a list and add support for that content type inside here. Okay, now let's go ahead and move over inside here. We're going to go ahead and open this particular project, add CSOM list inside here. Now, in upcoming modules, we're going to have plenty of SharePoint apps, provider-hosted apps with server-side code that's doing, you know, both REST API and CSOM calls. But because we're just talking about list here, I wanted to show one other technique early, which is I've just created a console app. Okay, well, how are you going to have a console app and run that and actually do anything to your Office 365 site? Well, there's this one particular trick. And that is, if you go to a particular site, for instance, let's say I go to my test site right here, and we've showed this in earlier MVA courses. So I just wanted to kind of refresh your memory if you haven't seen those, but there is an app, Reg New Page, and what you're able to do is register an app security principle. So you can say something like running on the web server inside there, and you can either bring your own GUID or have it supply a GUID. There is the client secret, you know, so any code that needs to call in as an app needs both of these. And then I'll call something like my CSOM app inside here. And now, if you're doing testing work for the app domain, you can actually just say localhost, which kind of turns off validation of where the request is coming in from. But you're still going to need to have the client ID and client secret, even though you can come from anywhere. Okay, so I go ahead, I click on that, and we create these pieces of information inside here. Now, back inside of my project right here, the one important thing to see is once you create a console app, the other thing that we've done is we've added a NuGet package called the App for SharePoint Web Toolkit, which is pretty much what's get added to the SharePoint projects that you're working with, such as the remote web ASP.NET projects. And so that adds familiar classes like SharePoint Context and Token Helper, which are used to looking at app settings that are traditionally in the web.config file, but it will also find them if you put them in the app.config file. Okay, now I've already set up an app security principle with a different client ID and client secret inside here, and I pointed this particular site right here. You know, but what you're going to see is that I have a program right here that's able to get the different values and call inside there. Now, there's one particular class that does all the heavy lifting, which is the wingtip content generator. And just to kind of look at a couple of these things inside here, I have two different helper methods that I wanted to point out. And that's not it right there. But if we look down here for content types, there is a create site column helper method. And when you want to create a site column, through the client-side object model, you have to put together a little XML and basically add field as XML. And then there's also a little wrapper function I have for deleting and creating content types inside there. Okay, but with these inside, you can see now how I've kind of built my logic. I want to create the wingtip site columns. Here I'm using my little productivity helper method right there to create site column, create one called product code, base it on this particular field type, give it this display name, and then let's go ahead and do other things to configure the different types. You can also see that some of the field types I'm creating are not just field, but field currency, field multi-line text. Okay, now after creating the content types, the next thing that we might want to do is we might want to create the content type. So here I'm calling my little productivity function, create content type. There's the name. There is the base type of the item content type from which I want to inherit. And then I simply add these field links inside here. So I've basically created the content type programmatically. I've added the site columns inside. And now when it comes time to create the products list inside, what you can see is I create the products list very similar to the way that you saw on the slides. But now, once the product list has been created, we say content types enabled equals true. We're going to go ahead and add the existing content type. So it's generally like we're creating a custom list that has the item content type behind it. So we add the product content type, and then we remove the existing content type that was there. And then I'm doing some other things, you know, such as adding things in the default view. You know, but just as a proof of concept, you know, let's go ahead and run this right here. So now this is reaching across the network into my Office 365 developer site right here from my desktop machine, not as a user, but as the app itself. And it's now creating the different site columns. It's creating the content type inside there. And once it creates the content type, it creates the product list that adds some sample items. And this is code that I have in a console application, but you're going to be seeing the exact same code a little bit later in the course in a provider-hosted app. And the proof is in the pudding. If we go back here to my Office 365 developer site, and we go ahead and we take a look at the products list that just got created, you know, we can basically see that it's a products list. It has these particular items inside there. It has all my different site columns inside. So you get the same net effect of what we did with declarative XML. It's basically we just did it programmatically in a far more flexible, far more usable way. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap up. So in this lecture, we talked about the benefits of using SharePoint storage for lists and document libraries and a couple different ways of how to get there creating those things as a developer. And we looked at both using declarative XML, which is easy, but sometimes limited, and then also using the client-side object model. Okay, so moving forward, why don't we close with a couple notes about dev.office.com?
Sure, yeah. So dev.office.com is a great place to get a bunch of resources that Microsoft has set up to learn about Office development, SharePoint development. So you see we have a few links here on the slide, how to sign up to get going with Office 365, how to create a tenant, a trial tenant that you can use for free for a certain amount of time. We've also got a, there's an API sandbox that you can go to on MSDN to play with the Office 365 APIs. And then again, if you go to dev.office.com/training, there's a significant number of links that are pointing to this module, this course and this module we just went through today, as well as many other ones that are going on through MVA that you can use to get ramped up. All of the demos that Ted showed, they're all the code for these, the slides and everything is all in a GitHub repository. Again, it's just office dev, dev.office.com/training, or you can go straight to github.com/office dev/training content. Find this module for the this course in the folders, and you can grab the demos. There's hands-on labs in there as well that go through all the stuff. So we went through a lot of code and all that stuff. As far as feedback goes, Microsoft is very interested to hear from you. So there's a place where you can have a discussion in Yammer that's in the IT Pro network. You can ask questions to the community and use a nice tagging infrastructure on the Open Stack Overflow site to ask a bunch of questions. It's a great place to get answers. And then finally, User Voice is a great place to submit any ideas that you have for feedback to Microsoft for new features that you want. And there's a whole voting mechanism where you can vote for it, other people can vote for it. And every week they look at this list, triage it, and keep you updated on where things are throughout the entire process of this.
How many times can I vote?
I think you get 3 votes, but they frequently are very generous in giving people additional votes too. They really like the feedback. I've seen a few of the things that I've suggested. Well, I've seen a few of them get dismissed, but I've also seen a good number of them get submitted and accepted and actually roll into the product as well. It's been really cool to see that. So yes, that's everything that we had in this module, and we'll see in some of the other modules that we're gonna do. Again, like Ted said, looking at the REST API and looking at CSOM to see how we can interact with this data in the SharePoint list that you showed us how to go through today. So we'll talk about that in one of our future modules in this course.
Okay, and thank you all for listening, spending some time with us, talking about SharePoint lists.